Thank you, confirmation students, for all of your help. You guys are pretty awesome. Are you guys available next week? What do you think? You want to do this again? All right, well, friends, we're in the middle of a series called Magic Words. We're actually near the end of it. Last week's our last sermon on this. And for those of you who are guests with us today, Magic Words, this has been our series on incorporating certain phrases into your life that will have almost a magical effect on your relationships and on your decisions and on who you are as a person. And so each week we've been looking at a different phrase. Last week our phrase was, tell me about yourself. And so it was with this idea of, in a world that's so divided, how do we sit down and have conversations with people who believe such different things than we do? And so sometimes what can happen with pastors and people who are maybe religious leaders is you've all seen someone who talked the talk but didn't walk the walk. And so I had to practice what I preached this week. When I was in my driveway, I was getting ready to come to work, and a car pulls up, and there's these two young guys, and they're wearing white shirts and black ties, and they say, excuse me, sir, can we chat? And I went over and I was like, what's up, guys? Are you on mission? And they were like, oh, yeah, we are. And they were some Mormon guys. Well, I learned that they don't prefer that title. They consider themselves their missionaries through the Church of Latter-day Saints. And maybe you've had a conversation with someone like this. So I said, okay, I've got to practice what I preach. So I invited them to coffee. And then I kicked myself because Mormons don't drink coffee because it's against their beliefs. So strike one for Chris. So I was like, what can you drink? They said, hot cocoa. I said, perfect. Let's meet at Starbucks. They were like, wow, we've never been in one of these before. And I was like, where do you come from? And so we sat down and we had some cocoa. And I got to chat with these guys. And you may not realize this, but in the Mormon religion, which is really like an extension of Christianity, you know, they have the Old Testament, they have the New Testament, and they have an extra book that we don't have. And so they believe some different stuff. And there's an opportunity they have after they get out of high school. And if you think confirmation's hard, they spend 2 years going to another part of the world, and then they get like a roommate, and they have to pay to do this, and they spend 2 years trying to evangelize other people to understand something about the Mormon faith. So I've got huge props to these guys. I said, do you have a TV to watch like in the evenings? And they're like, no, they don't allow us to watch TV or play like cell phone games or anything. I'm like, what do? They're like, read. I'm like, oh, okay. Like that. I wish I had that kind of discipline, so mad respect for these guys. But the conversation kind of became interesting when they started to approach like their beliefs and their faith and their story. And so as someone who didn't grow up in this, some of the stuff sounded pretty strange. One thing in particular I want to share with you that I thought was kind of strange and created an interesting conversation is there was like one of the guys was a little more nerdy and one of them was a little more of a jock. And so like the nerdy guy pulled out like an iPad and like talked me through like what their beliefs, but had like pictures to help do it. And I was like, hey, this guy's prepared. And so one of the pictures, I went and found it online, and it was this picture. And this guy at the bottom here is Joseph Smith, and they believe that that God appeared to Joseph Smith, and he started the Church of Latter-day Saints. So something that, and they flipped through this, and they had a bunch of other pictures. I was like, wait, go back to that picture. And I said, can I ask a weird question? Why are there two Jesuses? And if you zoom up here, like, there's two Jesuses. Does anyone else see two Jesuses? So I felt like that was a normal question. And they were like, they did one of these, like, oh, two Jesuses. And they kind of, like, smiled at each other and, like, oh, this guy, that's not two Jesuses, sir. And he was like, that's Jesus and God. And I was like, really? Like, it looks like two Jesuses. And they said, well, you know, Scripture says, and they're talking to a pastor, and so Scripture says that Jesus is, made in the image of God. And so, they look alike. And I was like, all right, well, agree to disagree. We're parsing, like, different religious views now. Like, are there, but to me it looks like two Jesuses. And it made me realize how when we talk about religion, and we talk about beliefs, sometimes what can seem totally normal to a group of people can seem very strange to someone outside of that group of people. And the same with us, too. There was a period of my life where I walked away from faith, that I became an atheist, and I considered all sorts of different ideas and looked at all sorts of different religions and eventually came back to faith. But during that process,
I had all sorts of questions, and I was a skeptic and a skeptical of all religions equally. And what I've realized is, as a pastor now, is that you might be sitting out here, and you might be equally skeptical of the things that I say. And the stuff that we teach as Christians might sound crazy to some of you. Some of you have grown up in the church, and it still sounds crazy to you. And confirmation students, you've probably encountered different things that we believe, and you might think, well, I don't really understand that, but like, sure, I'm still going to be confirmed, but you still might have questions. And here's a spoiler, we all still have questions, and all of us have a little bit of a skeptic in us too. So it's important for me, when we talk about Christian beliefs, that I want you to be able to understand some of the things that sometimes we just assume we all agree with no questions. And one of those things I want to talk about today. Like I said, up till now through our Magic Words series, we've been giving you phrases to incorporate into your life. And those have been phrases that you could say, magic words that you could say in your relationships. But today I want to talk about a magic phrase. It's not really magic, but a phrase that you can incorporate in how you speak and how you talk to God if you're a Christian or if you're a follower of Jesus. What are those words? And those words today are, thy will be done. Now, this is something, if you come to church on a regular basis, you say this in the Lord's Prayer, right? Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Like, we say this on a weekly basis. This does not seem like a radical belief. But if you, for a second, imagine that you are sitting in that Starbucks, and you are in the seat where those Mormon guys were sitting, and across the table from you is a skeptic, is someone who's not sure about faith, didn't grow up in church, has a lot of questions, and you are telling them about this phrase and describing, oh yeah, thy will be done. We basically ask God for guidance. To us, this feels like a very familiar phrase, but to someone not familiar with religion, this is kind of a crazy concept. To us, which sounds very normal or very easy to understand, actually is built on a number of different beliefs. And so I want to cover with you guys all the things that you have to believe before you even get to the point where you say something like, thy will be done. First of all, you have to believe this. You have to believe that there's a God. And we might say it this way. We believe that there's a creator of the universe beyond comprehension. Most people believe that there's a God. Even Einstein is quoted for having said he believes that there's something out there that's holding reality together, and that God is a word that really lacks the comprehensiveness of that being. But God, even Einstein believed in something that was beyond us. Most people in the world believe in God. So that one's kind of the most general. And as we go along, what happens is our beliefs get a little more narrow and a little more narrow, and it takes a little more faith to get to each step. So here's what else you have to believe to get to that point, right? You have to believe this. We believe that God knows and understands us. For a while, there was a religion called deism that was really popular. Deism is the belief that there's a God, but that God is distant and has nothing to do with human affairs. And so this is what some people believe, is they believe that God set the world in order, but then doesn't, that we are like ants, that we are really not of interest to that God. So for Christian belief, we actually take this next step, that God doesn't just exist, but God understands and realizes humans are here and cares. So here's the third step that we go to. We have to believe this, that God doesn't just know we're here, but actually loves us, which is another jump, to think that this cosmic deity actually knows we're here and then cares about us. All right, and then we jump even further. We believe that God guided us through history and that intervened in particular ways. This is where the Bible comes from, is that Christians and followers of God over thousands of years have collected the stories of how God has guided people, and we've put them into one book so that the rest of us can learn from those stories. That's essentially what the Bible is meant to be. And then beyond that, we say this, not only did God speak then, but God still speaks today, just not with words. When we ask God to speak into our lives, like a Christian is like constantly looking for the way that God might speak to them through their own, like their spirit or a conscience, or maybe like through another person in their life. Occasionally there's people who feel like they hear the voice of God, but for most of us, we just have to kind of feel that, and there's a little of ambiguity there. So do you see how these beliefs, like they start to, when you unpack them, it starts to feel like a lot. And then not only that, and this one I like, we believe that God will never force cooperation or collaboration, meaning God will never make you do anything. God will never make you do anything. God doesn't use God's power to enforce things on us, which is really where a lot of humans get into trouble. Sometimes it'd be easier if God made us do things, but God doesn't. God's given us a lot of our own free will. So now when you say, thy will be done, there's a lot behind that, isn't there? And there's a lot of things you have to assume that someone believes before you even say those words. Now, let's pause that story for a second. And, well, no, let's not pause it. Let's say that person, that skeptic across the seat from you says, all right, so let me sum this up. You believe in an entity beyond space and time who talks to you and works in your life, but only if you invite it in. And you might say, if you were sitting there, like, well, yeah, we don't call it though. We call it God or him or her sometimes, like, but it's a little, you know, formal. But yeah. And they might say, okay, well, so you ask God to guide your life. What does that look like? All right, so now I'm going to pause. Here's what I want to do with the rest of this message. I have two goals. One goal is to help you, if you have that skeptic in your life, to be able to have a conversation and to have some competency with explaining how your faith works. I want you to be able to feel a little more familiar with how this works, because sometimes what can happen is we can have a conversation with someone who doesn't believe what we believe, and we're like, well, I'm not quite sure how to respond to this. I've been there, and you've probably been there too. And the second one is that for a lot of us, we actually don't have words for our own faith journey and what we believe. And so sometimes in churches, we can just assume that just by breathing religious air, you understand how your faith works. But that's not necessarily the case. And so I want to help unpack this for all of you, and especially you guys, confirmands. I wish I had had what you've had these last few months, because I kind of had to ask questions. No one brought me along and taught me things. Okay, so there are 3 points that I think are helpful in understanding the concept of these magic words, thy will be done. There's 3 points I want us to remember. The first point is, 1, Jesus doesn't take the wheel. You've probably heard this, right? Who is it, Carrie Underwood? Jesus, so there's a few fans here, yes. Carrie Underwood, I don't think she invented it, but this idea of Jesus take the wheel, which if you think about, okay, what's this illustration like? I'm driving and I'm in trouble, and I've driven somewhere I don't want in my life, or there's some kind of turbulence. I want to get into the passenger seat, and then Jesus can take the wheel and then drive me somewhere to safety or take care of things. It reminds me of this. I found this online. Not that wheel, Jesus. The steering wheel. We can laugh about it. It's a little funny. Somehow, and I think this is important to look at, because I think somehow we've gotten in our heads that when we say thy will be done, we just kind of step out of the way, and we're no longer ourselves, and God steps in and drives the car for us. And to like a person who's skeptical about faith, this actually sounds a little sad. To the idea of thy will be done, or Jesus take the wheel, like someone might respond in this way, and maybe you can understand. They might respond, say like, hey, listen, Frank, Sarah, your individuality, your autonomy is the most important and beautiful thing that you offer this world. And religion just wants to like take that away from you. We've all heard the phrase like brainwashed. This idea that religions can sometimes take someone and just make them like a cookie cutter version of other people. I shared this, if you're a sci-fi nerd, I heard a folklore once that the guy who invented Star Trek came up with this idea for the Borg, which are like a robot species, that they incorporate all their species to be like exactly like them. He based that off of basically to be a metaphor for religion, that it just absorbs people and gets rid of their identity and gets rid of their culture and makes them exactly like everyone else. Like all of us have encountered a religion or a people like this. That's not what we're trying to say here. But you can understand why someone would say, like, the words, thy will be done, it almost sounds sad. It's almost like defeatist, like, okay, God, I've messed up my life. Thy will be done. You know, you can take over. You can see how this sounds a little sad. So here's the thing I really want to clarify, why this point is important. God will never take control of your life. God will never take control of your life. You are behind the driver's seat for good or for bad. Sometimes in life we can get to a point where we're like, I wish somebody else could make these decisions because I haven't driven myself to a place that I really enjoy. But when you're saying, thy will be done, you're not saying, like take over, God. What you're saying is, I need some help. I don't know half the directions. I'm not sure where I'm going. I've gotten myself into trouble, and I need input. There's a quote that was said 500 years ago by St. Teresa of Avila, and she put it this way. I really like this. It's presumptuous in me to wish to choose my path because I cannot tell which path is best for me. I must leave it to the Lord, who knows me, to lead me by the path which is best for me, so that in all things his will may be done. What she's saying here is, I've driven my own car, and the things that I think are best for me, I've discovered have not been the best for me. That when you have full autonomy, all of us can drive ourselves into the thick of issues and problems. But when you invite help in, when you invite outside input, that you can make wiser decisions and drive to places that are better for you and your life. Another way to think about this is, are you a person who's willing to ask for help and for input and advice? This isn't just a religious concept. Even if you here aren't religious and don't have a faith of your own, if you walk away with just this concept that maybe I need to invite people to give me some direction and guidance, and maybe there's someone who has a map ahead of the spots that I haven't driven yet in my life, like maybe I should listen to them. Maybe they have some input for me. Like, you can take this concept away, but as Christians, what we believe is there's someone who knows a lot more than any of us, and when we listen to his input, it can help change the trajectory of our lives. So there's something I wanted to clarify. Jesus doesn't take the wheel. The second thing, I want to unpack one more thing. Let's push this metaphor a little further. Imagine that you're on a road trip with Jesus. Now, sometimes when it comes to asking for God's guidance, what we think is that God has an exact plan for our life. That, you know, we're supposed to turn exactly here and meet this exact person and go to this exact place. And that a lot of us kind of think that there's a plan, and that if we make a mistake, that we've ruined the plan. That a lot of us, maybe we wouldn't say those words, but we subconsciously feel that about our lives. And I like to think of it more like a road trip. Imagine that Jesus is riding shotgun, has the maps out, and you're driving. And Jesus looks over and says, hey, listen, Chris, I noticed that you're getting low on gas. It looks like there's a gas station coming up here on the right. And so if you pull over, we can fill up. And there goes the exit. Okay. All right, well, good news. There's one more exit, and there's one more gas station here. And it's a little higher price, but we can still fill up the tank. And so just make sure that you, okay. All right. Jesus folds the map, puts it away, pulls it out. And I'm like, what you doing there? I'm getting the number for AAA because you're going to run out of gas. Okay, and Jesus says, okay, buddy, so here's what you're going to do. When your car stalls, I need you to pull over because you're going to hurt yourself if you stall in the middle of the highway. So pull over, and I've got the number ready. And did you charge your phone like I asked you to? Oh, no, you didn't listen to that either. Okay, well, we're going to sit here for a while and let your phone charge. And then you see what I mean? Like, there's that we think that there's an exact plan. But what I like about inviting God, thy will be done, is this idea of regularly adapting to the mistakes or the decisions that we make in our life. That is essentially what we are doing when we're inviting God to have input in our lives. And sometimes we think, oh yeah, I just did it once. Thy will be done. I said it Sunday. I don't have to say it Monday through Saturday. But as followers of Christ, there's this invitation every day because life continues to have need for instruction and direction. C.S. Lewis put it this way. He said, relying on God has to begin all over again every day as if nothing had yet been done. And the idea here is not to give away your autonomy. The idea here is to invite input. Like, this is not a sad thing. This is a wise thing. This is essentially what Christians believe. All right, the second point that I want to make today is that Christians go through, not around. That we go through, not around. This is what, when we say, thy will be done, we are saying, God, take us through things, not around them. What I mean by that is sometimes in Christianity, we think that because you've gone through confirmation class or you've become a Christian, that everything will work out wonderfully. That you have faith, and so now it's just smooth sailing from here. Everything's great. But if you've been in church for a while or had a faith of your own, or even if you've been outside of church and you've watched religious people's lives, they still have problems, don't they? Life still beats you up. You still have unexpected things that happen. You still grieve. You still have pain. The thing about Christianity is that it doesn't avoid those things, is that God helps us go through those things to the other side. And there's examples of this. Like sometimes this can be an abstract, so I want to give you a few examples. Like, think about this. In your life, would you rather, here's like a hard decision or easy decision, would you rather have a conflict with some, or tell someone the truth, which you know guaranteed is going to lead to some conflict with someone, or would you rather lie or simply omit the truth and avoid that conflict? Which one do you decide on, right? You know that the right thing to do would probably be to speak the truth, but you're guaranteeing conflict. You're guaranteeing a hard time. Why would you choose that? Because for God, he invites us through those things because there's something better on the other side of that. How about this one? Would you rather fight for your marriage when things are hard, or just leave and find someone easier? There's people who make that decision when it gets hard. You know what? Enough of this. How about this one? Would you rather have just enough to survive on through honest work, or live comfortably but through questionable means? Right? These are the issues. Like, this isn't just about hard times. It's about constantly that the life of faith actually sometimes creates hard times, but we believe that God walks us through them onto the other side where there's something more. Christianity invites people to push through hardship, not escape it. Now, as a young guy teaching about these concepts, if you've lived a little life, if you've been beaten up, these can sound really naive. This idea that why would you, of course, like, life is so hard, don't make it harder for yourself. The only reason I feel even worth bringing it up is because it's not my idea. It's Jesus's idea. And in the scriptures, we have a recording of his life, and we see Jesus live this out really well for us. Now, sometimes, even if you've grown up in church, Jesus sometimes has such a perfect life that's hard to identify with Jesus' life. And maybe you've encountered this too. Maybe you have trouble identifying with how easy things were for Jesus. Even the idea of his death, crucifixion, resurrection, you know, well, he was God. You know, it didn't really cost him anything. Well, today's scripture reading that I want to look at briefly is that moment when it costs something for Christ. And for me, is one of the most human moments that Jesus went through. And hopefully, this will be helpful for you too. Now, as we pull it up here, this takes place hours before Jesus is going to be taken, put through a mock trial, beaten, abused, mocked, and then ultimately murdered by the Roman Empire. Like, this is, he's about to go through something terrible. And so Jesus goes away. He knows this is happening, and he goes away to pray. And this is what it says. It says, Jesus left and made his way to the Mount of Olives, which is still there. You can go to this place in Jerusalem. And as was his custom, and the disciples followed him. And when he arrived, he said to them, pray that you won't give in to temptation. And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw. He knelt down and he prayed. And he said, and this, if you take nothing else away, I want you to take this away. He said, Father, if it's your will, take this cup of suffering away from me. I want to pause there for a second. Think about this. Jesus Christ is in this moment, before he's about to face a lot of hardship, he's asking God if it cannot happen, if there's another way. Jesus has doubts. Jesus has fears. Jesus isn't sure about this plan, isn't sure about these instructions, isn't sure about what's about to happen, and asks, hey, listen, can we do it a different way? And we often feel that. And when we're someone who invites God, like, thy will be done, it doesn't mean that it's just going to be smooth sailing. What it means is that God's going to be with us through even the hard parts. And this is how Jesus ends his prayer, in the same breath as, listen, oh, if there's another way, please. But, however, not my will, but your will must be done. And all of us, even if you aren't a regular churchgoer, you've heard this Jesus story. Jesus gets killed. We believe in a resurrection. But that doesn't mean that it was easy. It just means that Jesus trusted through it. Now, a skeptic might say in this moment, like, okay, you're a Christian, though. Don't you just believe Jesus is God? So isn't this kind of weird? Like, is he talking to himself? Like, okay, me, is there another way for me to do this? No? Okay, my will be. You know what? Like, this can start to, if you think too hard about it. And so this is a phrase that I've developed, and I want to give it to you. If you have this scenario happen, I want to give you these words. And this is what you're allowed to say.
Yeah, we believe that, but I don't know how to explain it. That's an okay answer if you don't know how to explain something. Sometimes we try to go for answers that we don't fully understand. It's okay. But you can share how you feel about it. You can say this: what I do know is that it's really helpful for me to know Jesus had doubts and still pushed through. It's really helpful for me to know that Jesus had doubts and still pushed through. Okay. So just covering those two points again really quick. And don't worry, I'm going to end this here in a minute. Third point, I'm saving for next week's sermon. So we're going to have part two of this message because there's more I want to unpack. And it's actually going to be about the 23rd Psalm that our confirmation students read. So if you come back next week, I'm really excited about it. If you've ever had anxiety or depression or dealt with fear, it's going to be a message you're not going to want to miss. So I'll just like leave it on a cliffhanger. But I do want to end this. The two points we've talked about, right, is Jesus doesn't take the wheel. This is really about saying, when you say "Thy will be done," you're asking for guidance. And then when you say, when we go through, not around, we're asking for support. So when we say, "Thy will be done," it's about guidance and support. Now, let's end with this. If you could sit down with one other person, not a skeptic, but one other person, and imagine that that person is someone who has lived their entire life with an attitude of "Thy will be done." And maybe you've met a person like this. They usually have like a spirit around them that just like feels like a little bit of heaven on earth. Like a person like this, they have incredible patience. You just like being around them. You feel like you're home when you're around this person. Like I hope that you in your life have met a person like this. And let's say you get to sit down at coffee or a meal with someone who's lived their life this way. And if you get to sit down with someone like this, I want to encourage you to ask a question of them. And the question is this: was it worth it? Was it worth it in your life to live with this attitude of "Thy will be done"? Did it work for you? And I guarantee you, their answer would be something like this: not only was it worth it, but the life that comes from saying "Thy will be done" every day is a life that is tougher and fuller and richer in ways that you can barely conceive. Now, as someone who was a skeptic myself, this is ultimately what has convinced me about the idea of faith. It wasn't all the rationality, because here's the thing. For a skeptic, you can never make enough rational arguments for faith to seem rational. But when you see and meet someone whose life has embodied these views, they are a different kind of person. When you meet someone who's been skeptical their whole lives, they feel a lot different than someone who's had faith their whole lives. And for me, the outcome is the most convincing thing. When you meet someone who lives their life saying, "Thy will be done," it is more convincing than any theological argument that you can make. Yeah, it's a crazy idea to think that the God of the universe loves us and guides us. It is a crazy idea. It's a bold thing to believe. But when you see the outcome of someone's life when they live this way, it makes that crazy belief powerfully convincing. And I hope that if you haven't met that person, that you get to. Would you pray with me? God, we are so grateful this morning for bringing us together, for helping us face our own skepticism, for helping us be part of a religion and a faith and a life that invites you into it. That invites us to be people who are humble and ask for input, and people who push through the hard times, not just try to avoid them. And so, God, I just ask you for anybody who needs to feel your presence or needs a little coaching for themselves, you help us be open. God, we're just grateful for that. And for the confirmands who have come here this morning, who have spent time learning their own faith and making this decision for themselves. In your name we pray, God. Amen.